A journalist, a politician, and a former government spokesperson, delving into the campaign season for the 2026 local government election. Is Helen Zille right for Mayor of Joburg? Has mainstream media left us, the voter, in the lurch when thinking about our choices? And has the ANC abandoned its post when choosing who they put forward for the positions of mayor? Joining me in studio today is Sabelo Sekete, Sunday Times investigative journalist, Solim Simang, DA Gauteng leader, and Maihlo Metjwete, former government spokesperson and a political commentator. I think what local general elections are about is it's properly about, can we all just? It's our backyard, it's our street, it's our councillor, it's our neighbours. And I'm deeply interested in the machinations. You know, we had the president saying the ANC should be more like the DA.
I didn't say that. I'll defend Cupcake on this one.
That's okay.
No, I'm joking. Oh, he's giving us a campaign anyway. But
we're living in a post-GNU society.
Precisely, right? And also, we have Gog Helen coming back, standing for Joburg Mayor.
So they're recording, by the way.
Eh?
They're recording it.
It's fine.
Okay.
And the opportune conversation to be had is somebody who has been observing local elections, municipal elections, provincial, national elections, by-elections, somebody who's been a spokesperson, been on the inside, in the belly of the beast, and in the opposition, in the belly of the beast. I think the right people in the room to have a conversation that says going into 2026, how should South Africans in this post-GNU environment be thinking about how they cast their vote and the important things? What are the important things? Do we even care? Let's start with you. Do we even care?
No, I think we should, you know. Especially because it's local government elections, I think, because those for me always talk to you. You know what I mean? It's a very personal thing. Whether you're in a township and you are dealing with much more, I would say, deeper issues around the lack of service delivery, the lack of water, the lack of electricity for up to 2 weeks at a time. You're dealing with the fact that Eskom is intentionally throttling you and not calling it load shedding. You know, you're dealing with leadership and councillors in your communities that actually do not care, you know, whether you're a party member, whether you are just an ordinary Joe. These people are just out there for themselves. But it's also for people in the suburbs, because I mean, if you look at how it's deteriorated, you know, just like the right sort of English phrasing for it, but like the quality of life, man, you know, at a local
standard of living
has gone down so much. You've got street lights that don't work. You've got potholes in lonely side streets. You've got unkept grass all over the place. You've got rolling water issues. You've got rolling electricity issues. You know, I think when we conceptualize South Africa's problems at a much wider sort of way, you look at the economy, you look at joblessness, and you look at those things. But when you bring it down to the local level, you look at the fact that clinics are no longer operating 24 hours a day. You look at the fact that some clinics don't even have the basics like Panado and Disprin. You know, those are the things that I think should make us care about, especially this round of elections, coming from a national elections where, you know, the outcome actually showed us that we are now more than a year, you know, since the electoral outcome, and the country is not burning. You know, the ANC is out of power, and life goes on. So I think that people that are going to the polls next year are going to have that also at the back of their mind, where before you would have had people that would have been like, we need to come out and defend. You know, now people are saying, actually, would it be such a bad thing?
Sally, let's talk about campaigns. Let's talk about campaigning. I mean, it hasn't started in earnest.
Yeah.
But this past weekend, we had a confirmation that your party is fielding Helen Zille for Johannesburg and haven't really talked about who else in any other metros. Is this a big, for you, strategic as the organization, a strategic arrowhead?
Not necessarily.
And what's the campaign? What's
yeah,
the
not plan? Necessarily. So Helen is actually the second. We've announced Celia Brink. It was okay. The first one that we announced 3 weeks ago, a month ago. So we are staggering them. We are doing Ekurhuleni next month, and we will then do Mogale and the other smaller municipalities, and then end up with Midvale. So we're doing them, you know, we're staggering them in
so
that way.
So that's Gauteng.
Yeah, that will be Gauteng, and other provinces will do their own thing as well. But the thing is, for us, the campaign has already started. The campaign is dealing with the everyday issues, as my colleague was saying. It is the everyday issues that affect somebody at a local level. The fact that you're now sitting with Santen that doesn't have two weeks, or that sits with 2 weeks of no water, and we are going to be hosting the G20 in no time in the same place. That tells you that there's some serious problems that are there. So when we talk about, some might say it's campaigning, but we are very passionate about the failings that we see, and then it's actually growing more and more. And the more you see these failures, the less you have a good quality of life. And that means you are going to have then the rise of crime. You're going to have the disinvestment. You're going to have you know, the inability of municipality or government in general failing to rebuild.
I want to ask you this. So you're fielding Celia Brink,
mm-hmm.
who in Tshwane mm-hmm. was unable to deliver what people were hoping for in Tshwane, and that hence the collapse around his campaign, his mayorship, and where we are in Tshwane now. And you're fielding him again. And Helen Zilla, age notwithstanding, many years away from this particular city,
mm-hmm.
and coming back after having resigned, well, not resigned, but having retired and then came back, and now yeah, and now you are fielding him. Is this, in your view, the thing that will win you these metros?
All right. I think I need to correct a few things. One is that Celia didn't fail. You know, I wish we had the same amount
He's
of time.
He's not the mayor. No, what just, you mean he didn't fail?
Yeah. Oh, can't, when you are removed, then it means that you would have failed. It's political yeah. expediency that you are removed.
Okay.
So you will be. You will still be removed so for even if you do. Even if you're doing your job, they will remove you because then they need close proximity to power. Even if you're doing work, let me give you examples. The fact that now the city has had a positive bank balance had to do with what we did, and then we were put under administration, and there was a lot of withdrawal and a lot of contracts that had been signed that put this municipality back into debt.
Mm.
Came back, stood against the unions and says, we will not be able to then pay you salary increases. Mm. Everybody made noise, but the following year they were able to then get the salary increases. And this is what he did. He says, let's sit around the table. Let's talk about how we will be able to then generate enough money so that we can give you salaries. That's when you started having an improvement in terms of the water maintenance. You started having improvement in terms of the streetlights that had been that were being fixed. You started having issues that will now be dealt with the Hamas groundwater as an example. And then we started generating enough revenue so that, you know, you're able to then give people, you know, salary increases that they were demanding. And that's what you did. And now they're wanting to reverse that because immediately after doing that, then Celia was removed. You go and listen to what Samu had to say right now. He says we were jumped into celebrating too quickly because there was a systematic way of doing things. And then we celebrated when Celia Brink was being removed. And now we're getting back to the position that we didn't want to be. Again, you go in there where people are now not following what is the most painful thing to do, but the necessary thing to do. You do what is so much popular at that point in time. And I can give you a number of municipalities. Right now, if you go to Emfuleni as an example, Emfuleni can't do anything. They can't even fill their trucks with diesel to go and collect the refuse. Why? Because 90% of the money that they generate or they have is going towards salaries. I can go on. There are municipalities where they go. Municipal manager has to go make arrangements with Pick and Pay so that the employees can actually then go and get vouchers to go and collect groceries. Now, that's not what we need. What we need is to have a change in the culture in how municipalities are run. And I'm going to come to the point about Helen Zille. You need to then change how we need to stop making popular decisions and start making right decisions. Sometimes we need to then say, this thing that we have been doing cannot sustain us in the long run. Let's put an end to it, bite the bullet, do the right thing. Why are we building houses if you cannot give people water? You build somebody in RDP with a toilet inside, but that person cannot flush. So are we able to then say, unpopular as it may be, let's stop building houses for a little bit. Let's build infrastructure on the ground. Fix the water, fix electricity, fix all the underground pipings that needs to then go there. Allocate people's stands. Once you have done that, then we can then start then saying, are we able to then start building? And we start building for the elders instead of, you know, just saying everybody it goes. If you do that, for me, that's when you start then taking those unpopular decisions. I was saying, why are we borrowing money to give money away in South Africa? Why are we not borrowing money to fix industries? Go to Orlando, go to Atteridgeville. Every township, when you enter, there's an old industrial area that has now been dilapidated. Why haven't we gotten money to invest in these things so that we're able to then regenerate an income and generate jobs for the people to then be able to then be independent?
That's all a wonderful talk. But my question was, is this a campaign, these people built to win? But that's okay. We'll come back to you. for you, Maitlhome, you've had the experience of being in the belly of the beast in an organization that had a lot of popular support. Building a campaign this time around, what do you think are the ways to go about it based on your experience and where the party is?
The organization you're talking about, is it Home Affairs or you talking about something else? Because I've never worked for any political organization. But to answer you, Bumi, I think there's a lot of PR around politics and it can't be removed from it. But as time goes and as people struggle with the basic services that Sabelo was talking about, you ultimately face the reality of, is my water running or not? Is my electricity on or not? Those are the kind of issues that people have to deal with. So as you design a campaign, I think your foundation has to be on what you've delivered and what you intend to deliver. That's the crux of it. And then you can put all the excitement and the glitz around that, but the foundation and what everybody wants to talk about is the basic services that they expect from local municipalities. And the challenge for the DA or the ANC is going to be unpacking what they've done when they had power and what they intend to do for the foreseeable future. The question is, which one will be more believable to communities and citizens? Which one will they think is based on track record is more believable versus the other? And that's how they'll make their decisions.
And the words that keep coming up are service delivery, the power thing. Could I imagine? Our power is not teka-teki as it used to be.
It is.
No, as it used to be, right? Okay. So, the conversation around that, and that you brought up G20, and you brought up potholes, service delivery.
Yeah.
And we're talking a lot about Auditor General reports. And what we see as service delivery. Do you think this will relate into people not showing up at the polls? Because this is another problem that we have in South Africa. People just don't care. People, and this is why I start by having a conversation around campaigning, right? Because that's what gets people out to vote. Do you think people still care enough to actually want to go out there and give people a chance, give a cross next to them? What are you seeing in the polls? What are you hearing on the ground?
Hey, look, I'll maybe tackle it this way. I'll sort of give you what I'm actually seeing, you know, sort of at a bit of a distance, you know, when you do the reportage and when you read work by colleagues that have been out on the ground. And I think the unfortunate thing, and I think this is part of the thing that is going to keep people away, is that you hear less of, you know, what Brasoli has articulated here. Is actually something that's nice to listen to. But then again, the cynical person in me will say, it sounds good. You know, when you listen to some of the bright sparks in the ANC, for instance, they speak the very same language. But like Mai said, there's no track record. And right now, if you look at how, you know, because now we are being hyped with Helen. We are being hyped with Celia. We are being hyped with personalities. You know what I mean? But we're not really hearing what these people are actually, or what these parties are actually talking about when it comes to, you know, getting down on the ground. You know what I mean? That for me is what I think is missing. Like, it's been missing.
Yep.
You know, the ANC will have a whole thing where they invite all of their councillors to a stadium. You know what I mean?
No, but also,
and then the best thing that the president and the national chairperson are going to say there is that you guys sing well, but you're not working. You know what I mean? Already that tells you that these guys have got no story to tell about what we what we've done.
Now,
so he's burning.
So now what we have is... well, two things. I think Sabela is quite right and wrong in the sense that...
I'll tell you why. Only in the world of politics.
it's an oxymoron. But anyway, the thing is, you need a face to be able to then tell a story. And we have said our manifestos should not be pie in the sky. Our manifestos going forward should be based on what is actually the lived experiences. And this is why now Helen is going around, going to communities, listening, talking. You know, Celia has been doing that. If you go and look at the podcast, if you go and look at, you know, what they've been doing, is actually going around and seeing firsthand what is happening. And that is what is going to inform our manifesto. One of the things that we learned from before, I mean, I'm a living proof of that. In 2016, when we got into government, we knew that there were certain things that we didn't know. But boy, did we find things that we didn't know that we didn't know.
What?
And you want me to repeat? There are things that we knew that we didn't know.
Okay.
We didn't know how bad the finances were.
Right.
We didn't know, you know, to what extent, you know, the crookedness was in the system. But when we got there, you're thinking, okay, this is what I don't know. But after you discover that, you realize that, no, this was just the surface. You had trucks that were hidden, brand new vehicles that were hidden, because somebody had to benefit out of tenders, out of contracts that, you know, were there. We were paying a service provider 5 million rand a day to provide smart meters that were not smart, but very dumb. So what I'm saying is that you realize that there are certain things that you don't know until you get into that seat, right? But then what we're trying to do now is to then do what we call the ready to govern. So what we've started doing is we started engaging with think tanks. We've started engaging with people like Professor Van Heerden. You know, we've started engaging with people in the engineering field, in the electricity, in the water, and all of that. And we say, we don't want to come up with things as politicians, but we want to then hear from you what is, you know, the problem and how do we then begin to then resolve that. So that when you then start going to make promises, you can be realistic. This is why I said, let's not go there and talk about what is popular, but let's talk about doing the right things. You know that in Johannesburg, as an example, the northern suburbs are still using pipes that should have been replaced some 15, 20 years ago, as an example, right? So these things should have been replaced. In Johannesburg, we should be replacing on average 1,000, or we should be repairing 1,000 square kilometers or kilometers of road a year. Do you know how much we're doing a year at this point in time? 80. Now, I'm saying, once you then have an understanding of these things, you can then come back and say, guys, let's stop all this airy-fairy, nice-to-hear things, but let's get to the base.
I want to ask this question too, right? It's also because we're voting for councillors, we're voting for people within our communities most of the time, mm-hmm. right? And this often comes to mind for me when I watch by-election results, especially in KZN, right? Mm. And see how MK is making all these inroads as it looks on paper, but it's also because it's the same councillors that have crossed the floor.
Right.
So, I hear what you're saying about not knowing what you didn't know, right? But we've got proportional representation. Labantu ama councillor. Labantu laba, they sit in the council chamber. They supposedly are engaging these things. They are in these communities. Why? Is there a problem too about the quality of person that is a councillor?
No, but also there's an issue about, I think there's a voter education that we now need to then drive.
Before we talk about voter education, you're agreeing that there may be... We'll talk about voter education. And I'm going to take you on this because the idea of voters making the wrong decision is... I think it's a bullshit excuse.
But
I want to talk about the quality of councillor, because these people are in that council chamber. Those are the people that is essentially can stand up to be the mayor, to be the... You know what I'm saying? Is there
Absolutely. And I mean, if I described a party to you, right, and I said this party struggles with rejuvenating young leaders in it, and lifting them up to positions of leadership, your first and takes elderly leaders and recycles them to certain positions, your first thought would be, I'm talking about the ANC. And now what the DA is doing, no offense, but the idea that you need Helen Ziller to come to Johannesburg, because people like Solly, who've been here, who have in-depth knowledge of what it's like to be a Joburger, are not capable of standing as mayors or anybody else that's in the DA. This idea that you have a 74-year-old woman, white woman, she's the only person that can run certain municipalities well. I think that kind of argument does a disservice to young and upcoming leaders like Solly. And it kind of underlines the point. It kind of underlines the point that you don't have Joburg-grown talent in the DA. People that have lived in Joburg all their lives, who know the problems, who can articulate them well, who are engaged with communities. You have to overlook all of these people and you have to go find Helen Ziller, who's the savior and the messiah. No, I'm just giving you feedback. By the way, I'm a voter, so you should be kind of
I get you,
so,
I get you, I get
so
you.
So I could be voting either way. So I'm giving you feedback on how it looks, the optics of it.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing we say about the ANC, that really, guys, you have to go take some old man out of retirement at 75 and say he must run one of the most dynamic cities on the continent. So I do think parties across the line don't do an amazing job at creating new talent that can take up the stage and drive public service. Mm-hmm. I think there's too much recycling. And it's done under this basis of a track record. Mm-hmm. And I'm not diminishing the importance of experience, but you can't really tell me that in such key areas like Johannesburg, a party like the DA is incapable of finding a leader other than Helen Ziller to run it.
Well, can I correct a few things?
Yeah.
No, one. But I do want you to do it. No, it's his opinion, it's a vote.
No, but I think it's important to state this. The DA is the only party in South Africa, that went out in public and saying, if you feel and if you think, as a member of society, not necessarily a DA member, you can apply. Musi was talking about independence. Since then, as independence all over, and then we'll collaborate after that. We are saying we wanted people who are going to then be part of the DA, but we're not necessarily part of the DA, so that we can expand on the pool. That's the first thing. Then we then from there said, let's subject people. So we don't go to branches and say, elect, but nominate. Maybe. We don't do that. We say, come up. There's going to be testing that is going to be done. You're going to go through psychometric testing. You're going to write exams. You're going to be interviewed. And then a series of scores from all these things will then determine, you know, who then becomes the candidate at the end of the day.
Okay.
So that's what we did. So it was not as an issue of going to, let's look amongst us.
So she passed it. She passed it flying colors.
This is the person that she bought.
So, and there's nobody else but him.
But there were people that were ranked. And as I'm saying to you, you look at all these things. Yeah. And by the way, there was never an issue of going to, this is script Saga Helen. Mm-hmm. All the scripts were marked independently without even having anybody's name attached.
I don't want this to be a bashing thing around Helen. It's not a violent agreement, right?
He says
this is the best person that you can field for the job, and you are saying
I want to tell you why. Joburg at this point in time doesn't need an experiment. We need now to get someone who's a change agent that has proven that they can actually then get things done and get onto the ground and do what needs to be done.
We understand it and accept it.
It's not an experiment.
It's okay. We understand it and we accept it. Mm. You're saying they were blind copy tests and all of this, and this was the best score that you got. And that's why I'm saying the two of you are in violent agreement, just from different sides. But I do want you to talk about why you believe the voters are making incorrect choices, why you are saying that there's a need for voter education at this point in time, so, after all the elections we've had.
So the challenge that we sit with is that I've seen a lot of times where people don't associate how they vote to the kind of service that they get. Go and ask in the townships if they even know who their councillor is, in most instances. And I know I'm making a bit of a general statement. I'm going to talk to you okay.
about my township experience.
Yeah.
I come from a township.
Okay.
I come from Pimville.
Okay.
We know exactly who the councillor is.
Okay.
To the extent that even my elderly parents have his cell phone number.
Okay.
So, and when I think about my aunt who lives in Dube, same experience. Those WhatsApp groups, so, Batali, what, lezo zinto lezo. That's what those
things are. So you're saying Gwede is wrong?
And I'm saying to you, look, Gwede has his own experience.
You're saying Gwede is wrong? Because Gwede says you don't go and have community meetings, you don't go and account.
Listen,
so are you saying he's wrong?
I am saying to you, generalizations are incorrect.
But this
and
is
I
what
want
I
you
said.
To talk to me again yes. about why you think the voters, this after this many elections, need to be re-educated about how they are voting okay. for their councillors. Ukuthi parties are fielding people who are not from a community as a councillor. That is something else that must be heard. I was in a
like
meeting
Helen
and the DA councillor for Midolands.
Yeah,
he's a white guy, not from Midolands.
No.
So
it's not a PR. It PR would be counselor. A PR counselor.
Mm.
So what we do is we have a pool of PR counselors and we allocate them all over, so that we have proper representation in every community. Right, that's what we do. The other issue is that when you then say, "I am voting," you are voting so that you are able to then say to this person that I'm voting for, these are the requirements. When we do have IDP meetings, this is what we want to then see happening. Please tell us, Mr. Councillor, when you go to the council, do any of these things find expression in what council does? Do you really represent us? Do you come and have meetings? This is what, it's not me who's saying it. This is what they, Gwede, and if you listen to Panyaza's latest address to the provincial executive, he's saying that we have failed the people because not only have we failed to go and account and have meetings where we're able to then talk about these things and communities know what our program of action is. But we've actually then failed to then deliver on that program of action. Now, what we now need to then move, and I don't care whether it's the DA, it's the EFF, it's the ANC that is in government. This is where we need to get to. We need to punish people that are in government that are not delivering. And this is what I'm saying. It doesn't matter whether it's the DA, it's this one or it's that one. That's the only way we can build accountability and build governments that really fears the voters and will be able to then deliver. And that's what we now need to work to. Unless we are happy with Ngzobusa Ntuli Chesaboye, and then you know we're starting to see that changing. And it's because I think South African voters have been sentimental voters to a great degree. We've voted and voted and voted in a particular way, and those that are in charge knows that I know Bazo Stolela, and then we'll be back again, we'll do the same thing. Bazo Stolela will be back again, we'll do the same thing.
But you see, this is precisely what this is what irks me about South African politicians, right? South African politicians have got this thing where it's the voters' fault, right? Mm. He says here that the voters must go and punish those people that they are unhappy with.
Mm.
How about you punish these people? Why do you keep fielding them again and again when you know that they've failed? You know, like, I just can't help but go back to that statement. And look, I'm not trying to turn it into a bash Solly thing, but for me, I think Solly, unfortunately,
I'm trying to protect Solly.
You're the only politician.
You're unprotectable.
You know what I mean?
No, the thing
is, it's just because he's the only politician. If there was another politician
they
would be saying the same thing that Solly is saying. But you can't say when again you've had people that have been sitting in your councils, whether you had power or not, then that the only time you will find out what is happening in the city is once you are in the mayor's chair and now you can actually direct the CFO or direct the MM to do whatever. Why don't you read these thick packets? You know,
you're a journalist.
We once carried a story, City of Joburg, right? And I think it was when they were passing the bylaws that would underpin the installation of the VumaCam cameras and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
Some of these politicians only became aware of this thing once we started sending questions to them about, do you know about this thing? And suddenly people realized, oh, damn. You know, there's this entire thing that is going to infringe, you know, on potentially on people's privacy. You know, but it's also important from a crime-fighting perspective. And then the guys come back and they say, no, but there was a notice, it was in council documents.
Yeah.
These guys don't need these things.
Well, I can tell you something.
So now, only when you're mayor, do you then realize that, oh, damn, there's something called an IDP.
Do you know?
Oh, we have a budget.
Do you know how many cases?
You know what I mean?
Do you know how many cases? Do you know how many cases we are now taking? We're now taking to the public protector and we're taking over to the information regulator because there is so much that they're trying to hide. And now, the famous thing that they do is to then tell you, no. You know, the Protection of Information Act is then saying they cannot. I'm sitting with 177 forensic reports right now. 177, that talks to billions. 177, they just don't want to give information. You remember the story during COVID of 500 million that was spent on revamping a hospital that was never even used even once.
Yeah,
the 427 million that was used to fog empty schools. And I can tell you now of things that are coming out of the woodworks. So these are things that they try to hide until you have to then fight. Sometimes you have to then go to court. It's not things that they readily and would want to then put out in the public. And this is why I'm saying the only time that I got to know of how much we were paying a service provider was when that document I actually sat in my office and that I had to ask for the whole file. Before they will tell you that there is a service provider is generating this for us. But they were not telling you that, you know, this is what they're generating. But out of that, they're taking this chunk. So these are some of the things that unfortunately, because you also have administration that has been so much politicized, that they will do the bidding of even doing the wrong things to not embarrass their principle, their political principles. At some point, we're going to need to also have that conversation about whether we do have, and we do have men and women, great men and women in positions in government that are wanting to do their work, but they're also hindered. But we also now need to have a conversation about those that are politicizing the administration and how we then deal with that. And it might be an uncomfortable conversation to have.
I don't think it's uncomfortable at all. I think how a bureaucracy should run should be in a fortified manner that is purely based on merit. I think if you create the type of bureaucracy that can survive political instability, you are beginning to be a functioning nation.
Yeah.
I've had the pleasure of working across various departments, Treasury, public enterprises, home affairs, labor. And the most successful departments are the ones that function no matter what you do with the politics at the top. And the nature of our politics now, it looks like we're going to be going into hung councils for the foreseeable future. So how do you create a government that runs, to your point, a government that runs without being you know, made unstable as a result of changing in mayor. So a new mayor comes, he decides, hey, this municipal manager was appointed by an ANC guy. I don't want him. Let's get him out.
This municipal manager is an ANC guy.
You know, so, and again, those are the type of things we should have a discussion about. How do you make your bureaucracy, your state, your government function without the interference of our politics? Because as we see it right now, we're not going into a more stable political realm. It's only going to get more contentious, more unstable. So we need to create a government that delivers services, whether there's a DA guy there or an ANC guy there or an EFF guy there.
Well, I also want to have a conversation with you gentlemen around how we finance municipalities. Municipalities are financed largely also by ratepayers, right?
Yeah. Mm.
As we sit in a country that has a bottomed out economy where most people, households may not be indigent, but most people have lost their jobs. Yeah. There's unemployment. Rates collection is, and I understand that this is a little bit of a philosophical conversation.
No, it's
but
not.
What does that look like going forward in this kind of economic environment? What does financing these billions you talk about? Where's that money coming from?
Let me tell you where the money comes from. You do proper maintenance of what you have, you save a whole lot of money. So Johannesburg is losing... just hold on. Johannesburg as it is losing almost 50% of its water.
48%.
So from rainwater says, I've given you so much water. You owe me that much. But through what they call technical losses, meaning water is lost underground because pipes haven't been maintained, so water is seeping into the ground. Or, you know, if you drive around the CBD now, every other 100 meters that you walk, there's water that is bubbling out there. So then you're losing that water. You have also a lot of illegal connections to that water and also to electricity, right? If you understand that for you to be able to then generate an income for municipalities, because you were right to then say municipality generate an income out of rate payers, and that is you paying, buying water, you buying electricity, and actually then paying your rates and taxes, your city levies and all of that. If we're able to then start fixing that which enables us to accurately know where our water is going, where our electricity is going, make sure that you're able to then know which families can afford to pay, refusing to pay, and families that are indigent and need to be on that database that you can then assist them. Your planning changes completely. Because right now I can tell you there are businesses that have been registered or houses that have been registered as indigent houses. But more figure lapan, there's someone who's running a proper outlet, a thing with a cooler, with a, what do you call that, that cold room in the back, you know, that is operating there. Or somebody who must then that has so many back rooms in there, but is registered as an indigent, but yeah, is collecting 500, 1,000 rent or whatever of electricity out of each and every unit that they've got there. So we need to do all these things. We need to then be able to then go back and say, let's check where are where do we have a lot of holes that we now need to then plug. Also, a lot of, unfortunately, I've seen this, a lot of employees of the cities, boy, they know how to take advantage of a system. Umtokona during the day, abahlizi abasebenzi. Akusebenzi, akuhamba mamol. 5 to 4.
And then they're ready for overtime.
5 to 4. Mm. 5 to 4, they jump into the park. Buy a lapana, and then they start saying, oh no, it's overtime. I mean, I remember looking at my reports, and I say to the city manager and to the managers, how does somebody make so much overtime? No one to learn 24 hours in a whole month.
Mm.
So it means there's something that we are just not doing right. We need to then look into that. When I wanted to then say, let's come up with a standard operating system where we know if it's a fixing of a pipe, it should not take you more than 3 hours.
Mm.
If a truck leaves the depot going for a job cut at Chile, that truck, we can monitor it at any given time. It's going there. It shouldn't spend more than 3 hours. It should be back or it should move on to the next one. The union says you're not going to do that. So it's a number of things that needs to be fixed in the system for us to be able to then get the system right. So I don't want to then blame Abantu. And also, you know, residents will say, but this thing's getting out of hand. Even if I can afford to pay that little bit, I'll end up not paying because the bill just keeps on piling and piling and piling. So I'll end up not paying.
Mr. Mashaba came here under the DA and said he was going to solve our problems with the billing crisis in Joburg. We're still sitting with the billing crisis in Joburg. But, you know, no, and, you know, you are reporting and on the ground and talking to voters. Last question for me. How do you think the electorate is entering this electioneering period that we are going into? Because we're in the next cycle of elections. We've just come out of, and people, I think, rightly are disappointed with where we sit with the GNU and what's happening and not happening.
Yeah.
Going into local government elections, do you think that's going to have an impact?
Yeah, definitely.
That, you know, I think the GNU chat for me is definitely going to have an impact. Again, like I said at the beginning, people have now seen that, you know, the skies haven't fallen now that the one party is no longer, you know, in power and it's
all
its
powerful.
Shared power. But the problem is that we had actually seen a model of coalition government in local government in very big metros in South Africa, even before we had last year's election results. And what we've seen is chaos. And I think it speaks to what Umahlomo was saying about the fact that you had administrations that were heavily politicized. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, it's not a matter of it was the ANC, it was the EFF, it was the DA, it was all of them. You know, and I mean, Mashaba for me was an interesting case because Mashaba is a guy that essentially, no matter what the DA says, they removed him there because they felt he was just too cozy with the EFF, you know? And that's a reality of a matter. I mean, Soli is going to disagree with me, but that's what it was.
He's going
disagree,
to correct. He's going to correct.
He'll disagree with you. I won't disagree with you.
We were reporting. We were asking about companies such as AfriRent. We were asking about contracts that are given to companies that are linked directly to the EFF. You know what I mean? That is one of the things that led to the fallout between Uhele and Herman. Mm. Herman will tell you that it was because I was taking money away from Santon.
Delivering services to the country.
You know what I mean? but that's the reality. And I think the sad thing for me is that I'm not feeling very hopeful about the turnout of voters at next year's local government election. I think part of it is that us as the media need to also own a bit of, you know, that because we buy into the PR and the gimmicks that these political parties push. You know, we go to a stadium and the only thing that we come out with there is the fact that Gwede Mantashe said that you guys sing but you don't work. You know what I mean? We're not talking to the actual people that were invited there to say, tell me a bit about what's happening in your local council. What are the problems there? You know what I mean? You've got metros that have got water departments that don't have a single engineer working there. Those are stories that we are no longer writing as the press. And I think for us, if we can then have, and I suppose part of it is also a resource thing, right? A lot of, you know, newspapers, TV,
no
broadcast stations don't have people that can do that running on the ground. You know, we used to tell these stories. We used to be able to know where the engineers are, the qualifications of CFOs in municipalities. We no longer have the ability to do that. And I think that's important that we also need to start thinking about, because we are the ones that bring these conversations to the fore. You know, if we allow Soli to sit in a 2-hour interview and tell us about all the grand plans and everything that they discovered that they thought they knew that they didn't know, and then we don't ask the critical questions, again, that sort of feeds into what the public then perceives. Because if they get a message from us that says our politics at local government level is about who's a councillor and who's not, you know, then that's where it's going to stay.
But if I can add on, I want to add on to what Sabelo is saying. I think where the voting public is right now is the best place to be. Highly skeptical of ANC, of EFF, and of DA. I think we exaggerate this impression that people think that the DA is shooting the lights out when it comes to governance and issues like that. We exaggerate that because there's a lot of people who can tell you horror stories who live within DA-run municipalities. So that level of skepticism reminds me of how South Africans were when Spuckler was appointed as the Minister of Energy, right? All of us were like, oh, this is not going to work. This is nonsensical. And he had to work against our skepticism. And he had to put a program together. And eventually people bought into it based on the actions and the successes of his work. Now people are talking about, can we include water into his portfolio? Because of the journey he walked with the South African public and more or less stabilized our electricity issues. More or less stabilized. I'm not saying it's our problems are gone, but more or less stabilized. So I think we as voters are empowered by being skeptical. And the parties have to go out there, not just sell us manifestos, but do the actual work that eventually wins us over. The only sad part of this equation is the voter apathy. But even that is not the public's fault. It's political parties' fault. So if you guys have failed to inspire, if you guys have failed to pull us out of our homes and make us believe that casting a vote is going to change our life, whose fault is that? Because you can't say South Africans don't have a voting history. We come from high votes in the 90s all the way to the 2000s, and then we saw a sharp decline over the last 10 years. But they'll say this is the public's fault. Fine, the public has a responsibility, but if political parties don't inspire us anymore, what do you want us as the voting public to do? To go cast a vote for a 75-year-old old lady because you think it's going to do something different for us?
Well,
I'm going to ask you a difficult question, sorry.
I need to respond to this first.
No, you don't have to respond.
You really don't.
It was a general statement.
No, sorry, you really don't need to respond to this.
We're just spending this entire conversation correcting stuff.
You really don't need to respond to it, but I do want to hear your opinion on this. Who do you think is your strongest opposition going into these local government elections?
I think the strongest opposition is apathy. I don't think there's a political party that it will be strong, but I think it's the apathy itself. And it's not a South African thing, by the way. Go and look at the German elections. Go look at the US results. You have majority of people of the age of voting not voting, especially young people. It's a world phenomenon. And a study shows that if somebody doesn't vote in their first eligible election when they're able to then vote, they're most likely not going to vote in subsequent elections. So there is a need for us to then go and grab the children, not the, the kids, while they are at 16, 17 years old, do that voter education at a schooling level. Not to go and campaign, but to do that education at that level. So that when they get to that 18 years of age, they already feel that they are citizens that you know, must do something about their future, right? So that's where I think we now need to then start. The second part is that, and I agree with the two gentlemen that they should be on issue basis, but they should also be on track record, right? But they should also be on the basis of who is able to then give me an idea of what they will do, and it's much more realistic. You know, I think that's what we're going to need to then move towards. And I'm a skeptic of my own party sometimes when we put ideas on the table. I said, guys, remember, I don't have a bodyguard. I need to walk that same street. If I make a promise, I should be able to then go and walk there and be able to then, you know, without fear, still be able to then walk that street. And I think that's where we now need to get to, is to then say, if you're going to make promises, at least give me some timelines. As a general rule, give me some timelines. If you are saying we're going to fix the road or this road at this area in this section, give me some timelines. Is it going to be a year? Is it going to be 2 years? If you're going to build a clinic, is it going to be a year? Is it going to be 2 years? If you are saying we're going to clean the administration, at least within 6 months, I must get a report of what you're doing. This is what I said to Panyaza Lesufi when we were engaging. I said, one of the things that I want us to do is to agree on a model that says all MECs must sign performance agreement, and those must be made public. Meaning that if you're saying, by this time, we should be able to then deal with the issues of agriculture, we should be able to then deal with these things. Let people know that this is what the MEC is supposed to be doing. And then at the end of the 6 months or the financial year, the expenditure that has been there must somehow correlate with the work that has been done. Right now you have people that are saying, no, suspend 98%. But what does that 98% translate to?
I love that you said that as we still wait for performance agreements for ministers from the presidency.
Thank you very much.
Gentlemen. Thank you for your time. I'm just looking at my clock, and I want to say thank you for coming and engaging and having this robust conversation, and we're probably going to have this conversation again because we're a long way. We don't even know when we're voting next year, do we?
Probably not? November.
Pr- probably November.
If it's not November, it's going to be January, by the way.
A whole year to go. So yeah. This conversation is a dynamic conversation. And I think you gentlemen have been outstanding in your views and in correcting the and the candid nature of it all. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.